Sirius at 5:50. We're going to talk some Bruce Weber and Big Men with the news that Isaiah Maurice was dismissed from the program yesterday. We'll do that here in the open. As always, 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350 to listen or to give us a call, excuse me. You can also tweet us at the game KMAN. Well, yesterday, just to reiterate here, if you are just joining us or missed the second hour of the show yesterday because this news broke right about the time I left at the end of the first hour, Isaiah Maurice dismissed from the team, violation of team rules, the reasoning given. A quote from Bruce Weber here, "There are standards of conduct required to be a member of our program, and there are consequences when those standards aren't met. Isaiah did not meet his responsibilities, and unfortunately, this is the result." So, big picture, the issue here is that this is now the 12th player that has left under Bruce Weber. And in particular, they have just had so much difficulty developing big guys. Outside of DJ Johnson, who they did a tremendous job with, and DJ, despite a really tough injury in the middle of his career, turned into a phenomenal Big 12 player and is exactly the type of guy that this program needs and needs to develop. But, I mean, here's the problem. We're going on three straight years now where size has been an issue and bigs have been an issue. 2 years ago, the 5-13 Big 12 year, that was, you know, if DJ Johnson was ever in foul trouble, the team was in big-time trouble. You know, you had Steven Hurt out there who was another big, but he was just playing on the perimeter. They always use the Dirk Nowitzki comparison with him. He wasn't all that interested most of the time in going in and rebounding, so much of it was put on DJ's shoulders, and the prevailing thought at that point was, all right, well, next year we're going to have some reinforcements with Dante Williams and Isaiah Maurice. Things will be okay. Well, then all of a sudden you have eligibility issues with Isaiah Maurice, and Dante is hurt. So that takes away those guys being there. You had the James Love injury last year, and instead of sitting here with sophomore James Love with experience under his belt and then juniors Dante Williams and Isaiah Maurice with 2 years under their belt, you've got none of that. And all of a sudden there is just more placed on incoming newcomers who, I mean, I'll be honest with you right now, based on the information that we have available to us, outside of Maywean, I think he's got a shot to contribute something decent this year. But the other guys just feel to me like projects. And again, that's okay, but you can take on those projects if you have enough juice on the front line in the big guys that you have. And I just think that is going to be a major issue this year.
And you can't go into a season as important as this one with amount of depth in your front court with or without Maurice. I mean, I think that you can still make the case that if Maurice, even if he were on the team, you could say this team is ill-prepared, ill-equipped for what they need to accomplish next season, which is to get to the NCAA tournament and not stop there. You got to get into the round of 32, probably a top four or five finish in the Big 12. That's really where this program has got to get back to if it's going to stick with Bruce Weber long-term. And I think that they were right on the fringe of that at best when they had Isaiah Maurice. And now without him, you're looking at a ceiling for this team. And look, I don't want to I really don't want to dump the rest of the team, you know, down to. I do have a lot of respect for the four main guys that they're going to be counting on this year, and I think that those guys are very, very good. But the problem is outside of them. And we've seen teams like Iowa State and Oklahoma find ways to play really well without a lot of depth, but they still at least had six or seven guys that you could count on throwing out there. K-State, you're limited to like four right now. I mean, that's basically what you're looking at and hoping that you can find a fifth or a sixth that can give you something, and that's just not going to cut it in a conference as deep and as talented as the Big 12.
Well, there's literally one big man with experience, and that's Dean Wade. That's where the list starts and ends right now. And, you know, you're right. Even if Isaiah Maurice were here, as Cole pointed out earlier in the first hour of the show, he was a 3.2 rebound per game guy. Now, a nice stretch at the end of the year that gave you some hope, but that just is difficult to get it done in the Big 12 if that's what you have in experience down low with these big guys. You know, I think Jordan Henriquez, to me, is a pretty good example of what you have to do if you want to develop big men here. DJ Johnson certainly as well. But, you know, James Love, size-wise, is a guy who is closer to a Jordan Henriquez. Well, Jordan Henriquez for 2 years was, I think, one of the most frustrating players for fans here to watch. it took him a while before the light switch really turned on, and then all of a sudden he was a productive player his last 2 years, including on that Big 12 championship team. You know, I think if James Love's ceiling is Jordan Henriquez, I think that would be great. But the problem is you're going to have to go through 2 years of really taking some lumps and getting used to things. Now, his was injury-based, and that's why, you know, he is not experienced, but when you just lump it in with everything else that has happened with all these bigs, it's hard for me to cut too much slack in that regard for what they're going to have. And Stockard and Shad, Nigel Shad, Levi Stockard, those two guys, I mean, they did not have impressive offer lists. I don't know a ton about them other than Stockard, who played in the Topeka Invitational Tournament and was not all that willing to do a bunch offensively, so I don't think he's a real offensive threat. Maybe he can be a guy that goes and rebounds, and maybe they will prove us wrong with some of these recruits right away, and it won't be as big a deal as everybody is making it out to be right now. But all we can do is evaluate based on the info that we have, and based on that, I think there are some real issues.
And when this list of, you know, we kind of look at it as 12 guys who have either transferred or been dismissed, when it was in its early stages, you could say, well, you know, we've had some bad luck with injuries. We've made a couple mistakes in terms of who we've brought in being bad apples and that kind of thing. But as that list grows from 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 to 11 and now to 12, you can't keep using that same thing and it have very much weight to it. I mean, at a certain point, the buck's got to stop. And I think that with K-State fans, they had kind of started to unify around 10 or 11 players about that being enough. And now this kind of, I think, is the tipping point for a lot of people that hadn't already been there.
Well, there are two guys I think it really puts a ton of pressure on. We'll talk about one of them at 5:40. But the other one, and I think number one on the list here, is McCall Maween, who is the kid that was at one point in time at Utah, then with JUCO for a year, and now is coming here. The issue with that is I think he is the most game-ready based on what we know, and he is a former top 150 kid. He's the most heralded if you're going for his recruiting pedigree of any of the bigs that they have coming in. But how much is he going to be asked to do? Will you be asking him to do too much if he comes in right away? And how does that then factor into what his performance level is going to be? I mean, I expected anyway that they were going to get decent contributions from him, but it's much easier if you have Maurice in front of him to bear some of that burden that he's now going to be forced to take on.
I'll say that I'm now a little bit more on board with K-State's non-conference scheduling strategy for this year, because now it looks more important than ever, and it looks quite similar to last year in terms of wanting to have some pretty easy games on the schedule early on to get some confidence for whoever it is, whether it's McCall Maween or somebody else that's going to be getting those minutes, because they will need a learning curve that they have to go through before we get to Big 12 play. So now that makes a little bit more sense to me, but it was not part of the plan from the beginning. We know that because of the audio that you played from the first hour when we had Bruce Weber on 15 days ago, and even within the last 2 weeks, he's been excited about what he thought he was going to get out of Isaiah Maurice this season.
Yeah, had really been going out of his way to promote what Maurice had been doing. I think your best-case scenario here for next season is going to be playing small, hoping that playing small will wind up netting you enough results. Maybe using Xavier Sneed more at the four and Dean Wade and Maween perhaps at the five, although Maween was really billed as a stretch four coming in here. But I think that is what they will be forced to do. I mean, that remains to be seen, I suppose. And I don't know exactly what they have in all these newcomers, but I would venture a guess you're going to have to see them play small, which is really what's been happening a lot for the last couple of years because they've just struggled to maintain enough depth at the post positions.
And it means that we mentioned earlier in that first hour that it puts some pressure on Dean Wade to do more than what he's done so far, but it also puts a lot of pressure on the guards if you're playing small, because you're not going to have room for guards that are shooting like 32% from three. You're going to need Barry Brown to make, you know, close to 40% of his three-pointers this year and score at least 15 to 18 points a game. You're going to need Kamau Stokes to be better distributing the basketball than he's ever been in his time at K-State. And those are tough asks for those guys.
You ready for the list of everybody that is come and gone, the 12 players? You want the full list here to
I mean,
cap this off?
I think I could name at least 9 or 10 of them, but go ahead.
Angel Rodriguez, Adrian Diaz, Michael Loris, Javon Thomas, Jack Carapetian, Nigel Johnson, Trey Harris, Malik Harris, Marcus Foster, Dante Williams, Ron Freeman, and now Isaiah Maurice.
You can put together a team with that.
Yeah, you definitely could. There's no doubt about that. There are some names in there that I think you forget about. You know, I broke it down really into like three categories of what you have here. I think you have three that were just ill-advised scholarships to offer. They did not have it, you know, in terms of cutting it here at K-State. Ron Freeman, Jack Carapetian, and Michael Orris. You had guys that seemed to be trouble. Marcus Foster, Malik Harris, Trey Harris, Isaiah Maurice. And then everybody else just fits into, I would just put it other. I mean, there are a number of different reasons for Angel Rodriguez, Adrian Diaz, Javon, Nigel, Dante Williams, all to leave the program. But it's been anything and everything, and it has been the biggest bugaboo that this program has had. And unfortunately, it reared its ugly head once again yesterday with Isaiah Maurice. We'll do You Can't Be Serious at 5:50 as always. When we come back, though, a Friday tradition, the star-studded Big Money Match Game with me as your host. You're listening to The Game.
Mitch Fortner, Tyler Dreiling, and John Kurtz as we play the star-studded Big Money Match Game.
All right, it is match game time. It's a Friday tradition here on the show. Generally surrounds topics we have covered throughout the week. I will be your host today. It works just like the old school game show. I keep saying old school, and I forget that it is back. It is on TV as of right now. But basically, I've come up with three fill-in-the-blank questions here. Tyler and Mitch will each try and guess what my answer is. If they can match my answer, they get a point. We will play to three. The rules always take twists and turns throughout the show. I have a tiebreaker question locked, loaded, and ready to go as well. So, bear with us. Rules could change on the fly.
I just want to point out, last week I did set the match game record for most points in a victory.
I think it was 1,000,002.
1,000,002 points.
Mm-hmm. That was a record. Thank
Very
you
good.
For putting that back out there.
And I think we should all agree that that will never be touched.
don't challenge me, my friend. Don't challenge me. I'm the host.
If you're going to make me set new records, I'll do it, John.
Yeah, the power is in my hands. Mitch, how about you explain the rules of how it'll go after I ask the question here, because I never remember.
Because you forgot.
Yes, I always do.
All right, so after you you ask the question, play a little music, and we'll write down our answers, and then you will give your answer first, and then Tyler and I will give our answers to see if we match you. If we go to a tiebreaker, we will give our answers first, and then John will deliver who wins via the tiebreaker.
All right, question number one, you ready? With the departure of Isaiah Maurice, putting more pressure on everybody else to rebound the basketball, who leads K-State in rebounding next season? Got a couple guys, like a stretch
four. Why do you got to bring us down on Friday?
Mayween led his junior college in rebounding last year, just about 6 a game. Your leading returning rebounder on the team is Dean Wade. You've got James Love, who is a defense and rebounding type of guy. Nigel Shad.
I got it.
It's a lot of dudes there with not a lot of experience.
A lot of dudes, yeah. A lot of dudes. All right. You guys ready for this one?
Mm-hmm. It's rock and roll.
Who leads K-State hoops in rebounding next season? I think the safe play here, just because we have more info and know more about him, is Dean Wade. I think it'll be Dean Wade that leads K-State in rebounding next season. I think Mitch is unhappy with himself, so why don't you go ahead and reveal your answer?
Well, I thought you were going to be fun with match game today. I went with James Love the third.
You even put in the third. Nope. I'm sorry, my friend. That is incorrect.
I thought we did see Dean Wade get a little bit more aggressive on the boards toward the end of last season, and I did think that was pretty encouraging. I went with the safe and correct answer, Dean Wade.
Actually, you just wrote Dean, which is borderline.
That could okay. That could mean anything. That could be the dean of agriculture.
It could, dean. Yes. Yes. The dean of what school?
Or Dean Jones.
That's good, Mitch. I like that. Yeah. No, all right. It's 1-0, Tyler, heading into question number two here on the match game. We have talked a lot in the last 2 weeks since the news broke that Bob Stoops was retiring at Oklahoma about the change in guard in Big 12 football coaches. A lot of the old guard is gone, and Bill Snyder looks like it's not going to be too much longer before he is as well. If I could choose any other coach in the Big 12 to be K-State's head coach once Bill Snyder hangs it up, it would be blank.
Current head coach in the Big 12?
Current Big 12 head coach.
To take over after Coach S once he's retired?
Yes, correct.
I got three in my mind.
This really should be pretty easy. I'm surprised you guys are thinking as
well,
hard as you are.
Well, it's I think it should be pretty easy, too. I'm just making sure that you're not going to give us a curveball here.
I think there's going to be there's going to be some movement in the baseball.
Keep in mind, fellas, David Beatty's got a top 20 recruiting class.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now. So he's got a 5-star lined up.
Let's get that committed. Purple jacket.
It's Matt Campbell, isn't it? It's Matt Campbell.
Iowa State. No. Now, Matt Campbell's fine, but this should be very obvious if you've listened to me over the last couple of days.
Dana Holgorsen.
I love their program. I do like that Dana Holgorsen is all about some sugar-free Red Bulls, but their program reminds me so much of K-State in the good old days. Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy is who I would have take
you
over.
You are no fun today.
What would have been the fun answer? Me going David Beatty because he's got a top 20 recruiting class?
Oh, he wanted you to say Tom Herman, I bet.
Tom, no.
Lincoln Riley?
I went Gary Patterson.
Well, that's not a fun.
The former K-Stater?
Mike Gundy is infinitely more fun than Gary Patterson.
Years ago, everybody was ready for Gary Patterson to be here.
I know, but Patterson doesn't, he's not fun. He doesn't like the media. Mike Gundy's got the mullet
thing.
That's
what's great about him.
He dances in the locker room. Mike Gundy is much more fun, and I know that is the answer that Tyler put.
My answer is a man. My answer is more than 40. It's Gundy.
Oh, boy. All right, well, Tyler has grabbed a commanding 2-0 lead heading into question number 3 here in the match game. Here's what I'm going to do to make this more interesting and increase the drama. I will make this final question worth 3 points.
Three, so there will be no tiebreaker.
We'll go ahead and – okay, we'll go 2. Okay. All right, we'll do 2. We'll do 2. That's a good point. I do want to get the tiebreaker in. We'll go 2 points.
My heart's racing, John.
I'm trying to build drama here, Mitch. I'm sorry.
I'm going for your record. I've got 1 million to go.
You do. You got to get to 1,000,003. All right. Final question here for Mitch to try and tie it up and get us to a tiebreaker. Our softball team got beat by 17 last week. You heard us talk about that on Monday. It was an 18-1 bloodbath. We have 4 games left. How many more will we win the rest of the season?
I wish I had looked at the schedule.
Well, see, I'm at a disadvantage already because I'm not on the team, and I don't know any. I don't.
You're
know
not.
I don't even know the whole team.
You're not at a disadvantage on this,
Mitch. All you need to know is that we're in E League, the very bottom league.
That's a crapshoot.
A B C D E, the E League, and we lost a game by 17. That's what you need to know.
But you have won a game, correct?
We're actually 3-1, I think. But yeah. A couple of the games, I'll explain it off the air. We didn't. I wouldn't ride home about them,
Fine.
Put it that way.
Are you including the tournament?
No, just regular season. How many more regular season games will we win? Are you guys locked in and ready to go?
I think so.
Okay. All right. We are not very good. I think we have, like, in 2 years, maybe 3 legitimate wins. I'm going to give us 1. I think we'll pull out 1. We're good enough for 1.
Out of 4?
Coming down the home stretch. 1 out of 4. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you watch us last week, my friend?
Yes.
We were not very good. We gave up an out-of-the-park home run. I've never seen that happen in slow-pitch softball.
That's not a very good laugh track.
Was that a laugh track?
That's very old school.
It sounds like white noise.
I got it from the Gong Show, actually.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Back for that one.
Mitch?
Mitch's reaction did not look good, so I'm guessing
he was
incorrect. Well,
I went with the number of points that I need, and that is 2.
2? I do not have that much faith in us at all. In fact, if I would have been leaning one way, I would have been leaning closer to 0.
Man, I went totally the opposite route.
4?
I thought that you
4.
Were. I thought that you were going to be all rah-rah and try to get us fired up.
All right, here's a new rule.
Go 4-0.
Here's a new rule.
Dang
if
it.
You're that far off, that's -2 points. So we are tied at 0
oh, wow.
Going into the tiebreaker.
This is a first. Nobody has ever lost points in
yes.
a match game.
Tyler just found a way to lose points here in the match game. So we'll go to the tiebreaker. Here is the tiebreaker. I am going to...
The team is going to be really upset with you, by the way.
Whatever. That's fine. I love everybody, but we're not good. I'm not going to blow smoke up everybody. We're just not good. Here's the tiebreaker question. It is worth 1,000,003. and 3 points.
Wow.
Yes.
So the winner here will set the record. That is on the table. I am going to say no Price is Right rules. You can go over, but just the closest in general to the number will win this. So here is your tiebreaker question, boys. Mike Moustakas is trending towards becoming the Royals' single-season leader in home runs. How many home runs will he hit for the Royals this year when it's all said and done?
So currently he's at, what, 16?
He is at – I shouldn't tell him. I'm going to –
hey,
this game –
you do what you want, man.
I'm not telling you.
You do what you want.
I have a feeling 1,000,003 points heading my way.
Coming your way? Gonna one
heading
up your record?
My way.
Okay. Now, this time you guys got to go first. I do remember
that. I want Tyler to go first. I want to know what
he said. You make the rules. Who has to go first?
I'll say Tyler has to go first.
All right. I have 35.
Oh, goodness. We're in a pickle here.
Which would be one short of the Royals' single-season record.
We might be splitting points here because I also put down 35.
You got to be kidding me.
We end in a draw.
We're going to double overtime.
All right, here's the deal. You guys just tied, and that is awful and makes for an awful ending here for anybody that stuck around for the entirety of this game.
Well, not if we both got it right.
You guys both get negative 1,000,003 points.
Wow.
And it will end in a tie at negative 1,000,003 to
what was
negative
the answer?
1,000,003. I was going to try and trick you and bait you into, like, he's on track to just smash
that record. He's on track for 44. Mitch, he has 18 right now.
Right. He's on track to smash the 36 that Steve Balboni hit back in the day. If you paid close attention to my wording of the question, I said, how many will he hit for the Royals
this year? I did hear that, and I didn't bite.
So I put it at 30 and said that right as he is on the cusp of breaking that record, he will get traded.
He's not getting to 30 before... Because he would have to hit 12 home runs in the next 40 games. That seems like a lot. Or 39 games.
He's on fire, man.
All right. I don't think he'll get there, but what? I don't have much of a leg to stand on because I have negative 1,000,000 points
right now. I'm struggling right now to go find some music because nobody won.
No, give me the winning music. I win this game.
No.
Because you guys both got negative 1,000,003 points. Play me off. Feels good. Feels good. We did have history made today, Mitch. I was the first match game host to actually win the match game because nobody could come up with a good answer there at the end. Lev, you can't be serious at 550, as always. One guy that the Isaiah Maurice news puts a lot more pressure on that we have not talked about yet, we'll get to when we come back. You can't be serious in 10 minutes to wrap up the week. Dean Wade has a lot more pressure on him now, I think, with Isaiah Maurice off the team. But real quick, I'll squeeze this in. Mitch, you're welcome for this one in advance. I found a great Twitter follow that I think you'll enjoy very much. It's called Wrestle Without Context. You ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
It's literally just pictures of random things happening in wrestling, not always WWE. Just presented without context. So it will just be very bizarre things happening with no context at all.
A lot of these we could not retweet from the game account.
No, I would not suggest some of it. But, I mean, some of these. Okay, here's like a random fight. And what is this guy's name? Is that Jerry Lawler?
Jerry the King Lawler?
I think so.
Maybe.
Some guy just reached around and grabbed his rear end and walked off after like cutting a promo or something. A lot of these that are pretty funny. I don't know what this guy is doing
at all.
Yeah, Wrestle Without Context. Mm-hmm. So every now and then it'll pop up on my timeline and just always have to smile. It is, it's pretty funny.
Okay, we know what
the second tweet, it's already cracking me up.
You're going to be doing that the rest of the show now.
Yeah. I told you, man. You're welcome. You can thank me later for that. We have been breaking down the Isaiah Maurice news today here on the show. He is dismissed from the team, violation of team rules. It obviously puts a lot more pressure on the new guys that are coming in. You can really draw parallels to everybody. It puts more pressure on Bruce Weber and the coaching staff to win. It puts more pressure on the guards to carry perhaps more of the scoring load if Maurice was a guy that was going to chip in 6-7 points a game, which I think is maybe what you would have expected out of him this coming season. But really, I worry about what this will do to Dean Wade, because Dean Wade was going to have to be a guy who scores. I think we would all agree that his scoring prowess, the scoring load that he handles, is probably going to have to go up this year from what it's been the last 2 years, when it's been basically totally stagnant from year one to year two. And now if you're throwing on top of that that, hey, you're going to have to be the guy that really goes out and rebounds. Maurice is not going to be able to be in there and be a frontline guy to help you pull down rebounds. I think that leads to some concern, just because Dean Wade, as we know, some of his issues, one, have been with not being aggressive enough, which is something that you obviously need to rebound the basketball effectively. And then another one has just been trying too hard, you know, getting in his own head somewhat. That's a lot of what we heard early on that first year in particular from Bruce Weber. He had a lot of expectations coming in here to K-State because he is the small-town Kansas guy. Fans love him. He was, you know, four-star recruit that we were excited was coming in here. And at times it seemed like he struggled to really adjust to all that. And I think the world of Dean Wade as a player with his potential, and I do expect a step from him, because the guys that have stuck it out 3 or 4 years have tended to develop, especially later on in their careers. But does putting too much on that plate take away? Do you have diminishing returns the more that you ask Dean Wade to do?
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say that I can see aspects of this that could be a positive for Dean Wade. And what I am reminded of is how he started last season. Not well at all. It was pretty bad from Dean Wade for the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season. And what he started doing was focusing a lot less on scoring the basketball, focusing more on doing all the little things, getting the assists, getting the blocks, getting the steals, getting the rebounds, you know, getting after it on the glass. And when his mindset shifted to that, it seems like it emptied his mind to not have those thoughts going through his head when he would actually get the ball with an opportunity to shoot. So maybe if he is more focused on doing other things than scoring the ball, there can be a positive mental aspect to what he's actually able to do in the scoring column.
So I guess your spin there is that because Maurice is gone, he will be dialing in more focus towards getting rebounds and thus will make everything else come easier to his game?
It'll engage him more, and he'll have fewer times that he's just sitting on the perimeter thinking that he knows he's getting the ball in 3 seconds. I got to make the shot. I got to make this shot. I got to make this shot. Maybe there can, just by wiping the slate clean with what's going on between his ears, there can be a positive aspect to it. I'm not saying that it's going to happen. Yeah. I'm just kind of coming at this with a different angle.
I would say it's worth mentioning. My pushback would be, I'm not sure that it would have as much to do with Maurice being out there as they probably would have been selling him on that anyway, because that seemed to be when he had more success last year. But I would have an aspect of playing devil's advocate here as well, and that is that if Maurice being gone, I guess, has him come to a realization that, hey, there is going to be a lot more on my shoulders, and that is finally the spark that just really ignites everything and makes him become aggressive and think, hey, I've got to be the guy for this team next year that scores, rebounds, does it all.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden it could be a good thing. The problem is we don't know when and if that is going to happen. When does the light switch go off, and what is it that's actually going to take hold and be the reason that would happen? Because, I mean, Bruce Weber's talked about it before. Like, he didn't know what to do, yell and scream or send him nice text messages. There were different things that he was trying, and it just doesn't seem like there's consistently been a pattern of what exactly is going to work there. But there does exist a world where, you know, if losing Maurice turns Dean Wade into a monster, you know, well, you're probably better off. You are probably better off, and we would be looking back thinking that we're foolish for having the conversations that we're having right now in the aftermath of Maurice leaving. But remains to be seen.
The conclusion here is that this is going to transform Dean Wade, and he's going to leave before his senior year and go to the NBA. That's what's going to happen now.
Well, hey, I was the one that said, of all the guys that should be asking NBA scouts by putting his name in the draft what they think of him, I would have preferred it be Dean Wade. I would think he's the guy that has the best NBA shot of anybody left on the roster now that Wesley is out of the program. Maybe outside chance Xavier Sneed, but I think you got Dean Wade out in front there. We'll wrap up shop with You Can't Be Serious when we come back.
Gosh, she's beautiful. Did you hear that?
So we'll open it up to questions.
Johnny Idiot Face over there is never going to bring you a title.
This guy sucks.
Cliff Kingsbury gets me hot and bothered, and I love it. There, I said it. That was from a man.
I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
That was a clunk. There's not much I can do about that.
You can't be serious.
I love this and what I'm about to play. I'm sure some people will listen to and think that it's me when I try and reference things like Little Uzi Vert on the show like I did earlier today. But North Carolina football coach Larry Fedora released a video trying to prove to recruits that apparently he is hip. He's hip. He knows what the kids are talking about. And frankly, I think he did a pretty good job here. Let's see what everybody else thinks of Larry Fedora's effort.
You hear that new Migos song? Pretty lit, right? All right, don't mind me and my fidget spinner, but this is why we want you at Carolina. At UNC, we play fast. 0 to 100, like my man Drake says. My name's Larry Fedora, but you can call me 2 Chainz. Raindrop, drop top. We got them J's you can cop. At the end of the day, I'm just trying to build a super team and win championships.
What do you think there?
I love the super team reference. Talking about the Warriors and
He was wearing a KD Warriors jersey in that.
I was wondering what he was wearing. Maybe he was wearing like a backwards cap or something while he was.
Here's perhaps a better question in the aftermath of that. How many of those references did you understand?
Just the super team.
You don't get 0 to 100, Drake?
No.
Never heard that?
Oh, even I'm
you don't know
than that.
You don't know who the Migos are?
I feel like you're making fun of me with these questions.
No.
I'm asking, do you know who the Migos are?
No.
You haven't heard their...
You know who I am. You know I don't know.
You haven't
know
heard their hit song, Bad and Bougie, that he referenced there with Raindrop, Drop Top?
I have a crisp $20 bill waiting for either of you if you can get Bill Snyder to say Raindrop, Drop Top at any point.
That's not worth it at all.
I think it is.
If I ever go meet Larry Fedora, I will have him say it to me. I can tell you that much. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of other coaches in the Big 12. I'd have a way better chance of doing that. Like, I don't know. I feel like Dana Holgorsen might be able to coax him into doing it. We got all these young coaches in the league now.
Lincoln Riley's doing it.
Tom Herman.
Yeah. Cliff will do it.
Matt Campbell. Yeah, we got young coaches.
Yeah.
This is possible, just not with Coach Snyder.
Actually, and speaking of Matt Campbell, I think he would do it also. We always leave him out of the conversation.
Yeah. Well, Tyler's trying to fill here because he doesn't have one, so let's go to Mitch.
Of course not. All right. So
what
I'll,
do you mean, of course not?
It's like the second time this week.
Yeah,
man.
I think so.
There wasn't a lot of – I'm not going to do something bad.
I found 2 things. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll just tell you guys right now, we will not be able to afford to see Mayweather-McGregor in person. This is going to be in the same venue.
Of course.
The same venue that Mayweather-Pacquiao took place at the MGM Grand. I don't know what the arena called. It's always going to be the MGM Grand to me, though. The cheapest ticket for that fight was $1,000. Now, the prices aren't officially out, but the MGM Grand is basically saying to just get in the door, if you want a cheap ticket to this fight, $3,000 to sit in the rafters and probably watch this thing on the big screen.
That's a get-me-in ticket.
Yeah.
$3,000.
And they're saying right now the average ticket price, talking gate price, not secondary market, is going to be $6,500.
That's even more inexplicable than the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight.
They're saying when tickets hit the secondary market for Mayweather-Pacquiao, the average price was $7,500. So just a tad bit more than what you're going to pay at the gate for this fight coming up in August.
Well,
John's birthday.
Yeah, instead of paying $6,500 for a ticket, you can just come hang out at my hijack birthday party because I'm sure everyone will be watching.
And pay $5 for a cup for the keg, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, I guess I'll, you know.
We're still in college?
Try and make that money back. Well, actually, when I went to watch Mayweather-Pacquiao, I started out somewhere where they were trying to do that old deal as well.
It's probably like $20. That's what I saw last time.
How much do we know? How much the pay per view is going to cost? How much are you going to have to pay to
watch
it? $100?
Probably $99.50.
So
I'm trying to be Fedora here.
We are all such suckers, man.
$100 to see a guy that's way past his prime fighting against a guy who isn't a boxer.
We are way suckers for paying $100 to watch this thing. Like I said, I will watch it because it's a spectacle. and everyone's going to be talking about it, and it is intriguing, even though, I mean, I think obviously McGregor has no shot if Mayweather wants him to have no shot.
It's going
to
be a better fight.
But see, that's part of why you watch it, because it's like, what is Mayweather's motivation? He's making nine figures off this. If he purposely throws the fight and loses, there's two more. He's going to make all that much more money in the ensuing rematch.
If he throws the fight, he is going to be tied up in so many lawsuits.
Well, I mean, like, skillfully throws the fight. It doesn't have to be really obvious. That's going to do it for the game. Thanks for listening this week. For Tyler and Mitch, I am John. We'll see you next week.